That's the rather menacing opening music to Mozart's 25th symphony in G minor, sometimes called his Little G Minor Symphony, because the rather longer and probably more famous one, which is his next to last symphony, number 40, is also in that same key. And that's how one gets nicknamed sometimes. But this is a performance by the Prague Chamber Orchestra, conducted by Sir Charles Mackare, as the very opening of that first movement. Heard here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Good afternoon. I'm Kevin Kelly. And on our program today, coming up, we will be having a short live performance by one of the young artists who will be featured on the annual Young Artist Scholarship Concert by The Chorale, which is a choral group based in Champaign-Urbana, who are giving that concert on Sunday, May 12th. So we're looking a little bit ahead for that one. We will also have music director Julie Beiler with us to preview both the Young Artist Scholarship portion of the program and, of course, what the chorale itself will be doing. And we'll hear some other musical samples as well. First part of the program, though, has to do with a concert that is this Saturday by the Champaign-Urbana-based chamber orchestra called the Prairie Ensemble, which I happen to conduct, so that's a full disclosure there. And the music that you just heard is also the music that will open that concert, which is a concert that has three works on it. Of course, the 25th Symphony of Mozart, the First Horn Concerto by Richard Strauss, which will feature the University of Illinois horn professor Bernard Scully as the soloist. And for pertinent to the this portion of Live and Local today, the Fifth Symphony of English composer Ralph Vaughan Williams, or Ralph, as you are more likely to say it if you are American and see it, because that's what it looks like. But at least some in England say Ralph, and that's, I understand, what he said, I guess. My guest to talk about music on Vaughan Williams is somebody who's been teaching Vaughan Williams all semester long, and so that composer is uppermost in her mind for at least a while, and I know that this particular piece is a favorite of hers. She's Christina Bashford, who is Associate Professor of Musicology at the University of Illinois, and I guess you've been on the show once or twice before, perhaps.
Yeah, certainly.
And glad to welcome you back.
Thank you.
So what draws you to the music of Vaughan Williams, especially to the point of wanting to teach a whole graduate seminar?
This is a graduate seminar on Vaughan Williams, and we've just wrapped it up for the semester, yeah. What draws me to it? Well, I guess it's partly personal and emotional. Particularly this work, funnily enough, was probably the first piece of Vaughan Williams that I really got to know as a young violinist. But English music and English musical life is my specialty. And while sometimes we teach seminars that are quite close to our research interests, at this time I thought I'd do something on a composer who I've never really worked on seriously, but who I've heard other people talk about and whose music I love. So what better a thing to do than to teach a class on it? It was wonderful.
I think there's probably, in fact, I actually thought about leading in the program to this with this music. The most famous work of his to most people, or if at least an awful lot of people, is called The Fantasia on a Theme of Thomas Tallis.
Ah.
At least if you're an FM radio listener, a classical music radio listener, because classical stations, including ours, love to play this piece.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it's got a wonderful tune, which actually is a very short hymn, semi-hymn-like
That's
tune.
Right. It is a hymn, yeah. It's
which lasts like a couple of minutes or something, and he turned it into a 15-16-minute work for what
solo string quartet, yeah.
But it's got some of the qualities of a lot of other music of Vaughan Williams, including this piece.
Yes, absolutely.
I would say. Which you would characterize as what?
What would I? That's a really good question. I mean, a lot of people characterize Vaughan Williams's music in a very simplistic way as being sort of nostalgic, pastoral, and sort of reminiscent of the English countryside, and so on and so forth. And in fact, Vaughan Williams's music is, well, it is that, but it's a lot of other things as well. And in a lot of Vaughan Williams, you can hear, if you listen carefully, a very dark and troubled edge to a lot of what he writes. There's a sort of, there's a really sorrowful character that's sort of underneath the surface of a lot of his music. There's a lot of elegiac aspects to his work. And the more you look at it, the more you hear it, and the more you see it, and the more you know the man, the more you start to understand it. So simple generalizations about Vaughan Williams as being a sort of bumbling English country composer are way from the truth.
And we are listening at the moment to the very opening music of his Fifth Symphony, which I think probably illustrates at least a couple of those points.
Absolutely. It's very unsettled. There's something deeply sort of disturbed and disconnected, in a way, about that opening passage.
But it's also, could be said, is pastoral.
It is
also
pastoral. And it's the undertow underneath. If you listen carefully to the bass line, you sort of hear it. That causes that discrepancy.
And of course, pastoral, you know, I always wonder, what exactly does pastoral mean?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, people often use it for Vaughan Williams because we know two things. We know that he was a folk song collector and that he used some folk song in, he adapted folk songs and arranged folk songs. He also used folk song as a sort of inspiration for his own melodic creativity. So that's one part that sort of, we think of folk song as being music of, say, country folk. And then on the other hand, you've got a lot of pieces by Vaughan Williams which have got specific titles that indicate countryside, Norfolk Rhapsody, In the Fen Country, and so on and so forth. So you put those all together and people think of pastoral as being countryside. But in a lot of Vaughan Williams' music, and in particular his pastoral symphony, the term pastoral actually alludes to the tradition in English poetry where pastoral is elegy. So and there you get the key to it, because it's the idea of pastoral as elegy, as mourning. And the Third Symphony is nothing to do with lambkins and cows and all that sort of malarkey. It's absolutely to do with Vaughan Williams' experience of sorrow and devastation at having seen so many of his friends die in the Great War and having himself served as an ambulance man in France.
The Fifth Symphony, though, came right at the start of the Second World War.
Yes, yeah, he began it in 1938, so just before, and I think he finished it in 43. And again, that actually, you set up a really good parallel there, because whereas the Third Symphony ends in a very sort of questioning way, it doesn't sort of close out with any sort of affirmation. That's the Third Symphony. In the Fifth Symphony, which is written during the Second World War, he closes in a much more serene and, in a sense, optimistic way. And I think that there's a reason for that. The Pastoral Symphony was written after the First World War was over, where he could look back at the trauma and maybe could say that sort of thing. In the Fifth Symphony, it's a public statement. I think the only possible ending, people have argued, is a tonal, glorious D major ending.
So that is some of the first movement of the Fifth Symphony of Ray Vaughan Williams. This is one of the classic recordings, by the way. I've been certainly exploring a number of different recordings because I always like to know, if I'm going to conduct a piece, how, you know, what is the performing tradition? And certainly there's one in England, or I don't know if there's one in England, but Adrian Bolt, who is the guy who is conducting here, the New Philharmonia Orchestra, I think in this performance, was close enough to Vaughan Williams that one could say he's a really authoritative conductor of this music. So I figure, you know, he's a good guy to listen to. And it's also the first piece that a conductor who's recording that I heard of this piece. It's really the reason I wanted to conduct this piece with the Prairie Ensemble this weekend.
It's a beautiful recording. Yeah. It's gorgeous.
And it's a beautiful symphony.
It's a wonderful symphony.
You're listening to Live and Local here on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly with Christina Bashford talking about music by Vaughan Williams. It'll be featured on a concert by the Prairie Ensemble this Saturday night at 7:30 at McKinley Presbyterian Church in Champaign. There's a pre-concert talk at 7 o'clock, which I'll be doing with Bernard Scully, who's the horn soloist for Strauss's first horn concerto, first of two. And we may or may not hear any of that coming up. We're going to spend this first half of the program today talking mostly about Vaughan Williams before we'll be concentrating on another performance happening in Champaign coming up in a couple of weeks. Well, I guess next weekend on Sunday, May 12th, by the Chorale. Our program today on Live and Local is made possible by the Champaign-Urbana Ballet, presenting its stylistically magical production of Prokofiev's Cinderella in four performances, May 3rd through 5th, in the newly renovated Virginia Theater in downtown Champaign. Tickets are available at 356-9063 or thevirginia.org. There are four movements to this piece. All of them begin and end quietly.
Yes.
Which, I imagine for a lot of orchestral programmers is not the best way to either begin or end a concert. Mm-hmm. And I'm not beginning the concert with it, but I am ending the concert with it. And does that sort of go along with, you think, his response to what was happening in the war at the time? Or some other reason?
Some other reason. Let's talk about the ending, shall we? Because, in a sense, this is a symphony in D major. That's what's on the title page. But actually, D major as a key is only actually really settled in the final movement. All the other movements don't really sit in D major.
I have to say, from a conductor's and especially a performer's point of view, the piece is maddening. It changes key constantly.
Yeah. In a way, the sort of the serene resolution of this symphony, the fact that in wartime, as I said earlier, perhaps the only way to end would be in a positive way. Yeah. But what's really interesting is that Vaughan Williams, who himself had, as I said, these really sort of deep and traumatic feelings about the horrors of war, didn't actually end in a blaze of triumphant glory. He actually ends and it just lets the music dissolve. So that's one way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it is the very fact that a lot of the material that Vaughan Williams drew on in this symphony actually came from drafts of the opera that he was writing throughout his career called The Pilgrim's Progress, based on John Bunyan's religious novel, The Pilgrim's Progress from This World to the One Thereafter, or something like that, I think the full title is. And this links up with one of Vaughan Williams' other concerns, which is this sort of draw to religious literature, even though he himself had become an agnostic quite early on. This fascination or concern with what was there afterwards. Yeah? It's reflected in many other works, for instance, his choral piece Toward the Unknown Region. Anyway, if we go back to The Pilgrim's Progress, some of the material draws from that. And it is possible to see the symphony as acting out some of the themes in The Pilgrim's Progress. The pilgrim is on a journey. It's an allegorical journey towards what's called the Celestial City, which is, in a way, heaven. So the idea that at the end of the symphony, in a sense, Vaughan Williams reaches that celestial city. And so it's not a blaze of triumphalism, but it's like an aura or a halo of serenity. And that quiet ending is absolutely a way of interpreting that, if you want a programmatic interpretation.
He does have, particularly in the second movement, which is the scherzo movement, mm-hmm. which is pretty, I mean, these are standard movements that they're, you know, I played some music of Mozart, which is going to begin this concert by mm-hmm. the Prairie Ensemble mm-hmm. Saturday. And it's the same standard symphonic form. You have an opening movement in some form mm-hmm. or another, and then you have a slow movement, and then you have a minuet or a scherzo if it's mm-hmm. Beethoven, and then you have the final movement that mm-hmm. is fast, although, and this follows all mm-hmm. those, except the slow movement comes before the scherzo comes mm-hmm. before the slow movement. So it's a very classical piece in that sense, I guess. at least in the standard symphonic, the large symphonic form.
But right.
It breaks down then once you actually get into all the pieces. And this scherzo movement has the bits that are common a lot of Vaughan Williams of little dance-like things,
yes.
Folk. I don't know if they're actual folk songs,
but they sound like they could be.
And in fact, here's where some ways. Here is one of them actually, in the midst of the scherzo movement. I mean, this is probably not overly legitimate, but I can imagine somehow getting to the pastoral idea. That little tune,
right here.
Almost sounds like flutes chirping and other sorts of birds making odd sounds, but it could be just as easily, I suppose, bombs dropping on and creating little disturbances
in somehow or another.
Well, because you were talking earlier about things that are unsettled. Mm-hmm. This moment
this
right
is very
here.
Yes. This is an odd movement in all sorts of ways. I mean, I can certainly remember the first time I heard it and played it as a student. I found it the most bizarre piece. Couldn't make head or tail of it in some ways.
Well, if you're a string player,
it's really hard.
It's really hard, and there's no pattern to it. And in a way, the string parts are important overall musically because they just murmur.
Mm-hmm.
So then one has to ask, why did he make them so difficult and annoying to practice and play? But they create this exquisite underpinning for, right now, this what sounds like a hymn.
Yes, yes.
Which it isn't.
No.
But it sounds like one.
Although there are some fragments of hymn tunes actually embedded in this symphony, including some of the hymn tunes he himself wrote. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
I should know that. That's right. So you probably know that Vaughan Williams edited the English hymnal, the big revision of the English hymn book, which was made in the early 20th century as a sort of reaction towards against a lot of the sort of Victorian hymns that had fallen out of fashion. And for that, he did a lot of editing, obviously, but he also introduced new tunes, some medieval, some folk song, and he also made up some of his own, including the setting you probably know of For All the Saints, Sine Nomine, and there's a little fragment of that in the first movement. So you can look out
now
for that
next
time.
I have to go look at these things because I know all these tunes.
Of course you do.
And I didn't, you know, I didn't go back and look at somebody's analysis of the piece to see some of these things that might be there. But now I'm going to have to do that in the next 2 days before having to perform this piece.
The clue is Alleluia. I'll just tell you that, and then you'll probably find it.
Okay, thank you very much. Because now I'll be looking for the beginning of the tune.
Yeah. But the scoring of that scherzo is just amazing. I mean, it's exquisitely scored, don't you think?
Well, yeah. I mean, not least because of, and actually, it's true for the whole piece, where he dovetails what the strings are doing into what the winds are doing. He doubles what. You know, the winds and strings will often be double. He'll change colors. Mm-hmm. For example, my principal cellist at rehearsal the other day, I guess it's traditional for a cellist often if you see a solo passage and it's called for mutes, you know, for strings to be muted. I didn't know this. Maybe I should have, that, you know, often the cellist will take the mute off for a solo part. And I suggested that I think here he's just adding the color of a single solo cello or a single solo viola to another string section, which is playing the same music.
Yeah.
And he does this all the way through and just changes the color slightly.
Absolutely. Well, you see, I mean, he studied at the Royal College of Music and in London, and Charles Villiers Stanford, famous Victorian composer, was his principal teacher. But after he finished there, he went first to study with Max Bruch in Germany, and then he went to France to have some lessons with Maurice Ravel to acquire what he, I think, himself determined was a little French polish.
Hmm.
And Ravel, actually, I gather, I've read this somewhere.
Probably written by a musicologist,
so it must be true.
Yeah.
No, I'm pretty sure this is verifiable. Ravel thought very highly of him and described him as the only one of his pupils who hadn't actually aped Ravel's own style, but went off, took what he'd learnt and applied it to his own idiom without being derivative of his teacher.
The probably the heart of the piece is the third movement.
Oh, yes.
And I think it's got to be one of the most beautiful pieces of music written.
Ever.
There's an awful lot of beautiful music written in this world, and this one would be right up there in my mind.
This one makes me cry frequently, so I'll try not to do that if you're going to
play. It's called a romanza or romance, but...
Not in that sort of, not in the sort of traditional romantic.
It's not lovey-dovey.
No, no. I think it's more about a tender story as much as anything else. What's interesting here is that here is, in the principal material that we hear really early on in the, what I've learned to call the English horn, but what Vaughan Williams would have called the cor anglais, the actual tune comes from, again, comes from the Pilgrim's Progress. And this is a point where the pilgrim is... asking for salvation, looking for some pointers to go on his journey, and reaffirming his faith. And the actual tune that the cor, that the English horn plays, the pilgrim actually sings, and this is the text, and I had to write it down and bring it because I knew I wouldn't remember. But the words are, "He hath given me rest by his sorrow and life by his death."
And of course, just as you were saying, that we were just getting at the end of the English horn tune, but it comes up later.
It comes
we'll
up
see
later.
How far we get into
and
it.
the strings have it in it.
The full string section, unison strings. It's
sound.
Yeah. I think it comes right after this. It's a little farther along.
I think it may be further. It's further.
And it never seems to fail that these announcements come crashing into the quietest parts of the music, of course, that we're talking about here on Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. My guest on this portion of the show is Professor Christina Bashford at the University of Illinois, professor of musicology, who's been teaching a class on Ray Vaughan Williams this semester, just finishing. And the Fifth Symphony of Vaughan Williams will be played by the Prairie Ensemble as the second half of its concert this Saturday night at 7:30 at the McKinley Presbyterian Church at 5th and John Streets in Champaign, with a pre-concert talk at 7 o'clock, where I'll be talking with the horn soloist for Richard Strauss's first horn concerto, which will be in the middle of that program. The concert begins with the 25th Symphony of Mozart. And coming up, I'll be talking with Julie Beiler, who is music director of The Chorale, a choral ensemble based in Champaign-Urbana. They're giving a concert on Sunday, May 12th, and it'll be their annual Young Artist Scholarship Concert. So we've got one of those young artists going to be performing for us live on the program today as well. So what I guess we were talking a bit about this beautiful movement of Vaughan Williams, this romance, which I'm now going to turn back up a little bit.
Wonderful. Which is the emotional heart of the piece, right? Is the center.
Yeah. In fact, we are now coming back to the music. We interrupted, except for different instruments here.
Ah, okay.
Whereas it's sort of a wandering kind of tune that gets passed around the woodwinds,
yes,
before coming back to the larger, mostly string tune. And here's tension introduced that you don't quite expect,
right,
and it goes away.
Yes. In fact, in the central section of this movement, some of the little material that he uses comes again from that scene in Pilgrim's Progress, where this that exactly that little phrase, that lilting phrase, Yara. The pilgrim sings, save me, save me.
So for a decidedly non-religious guy,
oh, he,
Vaughan
yeah.
Williams had a pretty strong religious sentiment going on somewhere inside.
Absolutely. His father was a clergyman. Mm. I mean, and he was brought up in the Anglican Church, had a crisis of confidence as a student, I think spent a period as an atheist, and then came to this, I think he himself described as a Christian agnostic position. I mean, he was. You look at his output. There's masses of music for religious purposes.
Here's that tune that opens in the English horn is now in the French horn.
Yes.
Just a fragment of
that. Fragment.
It,
yeah.
Comes back to the music that actually opens that mm-hmm. opens the actually that opens that movement, and for that matter that opens the symphony earlier, sort of combining some of these
right.
tunes together.
Yeah. And in the finale, the opening passage that we began with, that sort of that unsettled music, just at the point when we think in the finale that everything has settled into this sort of comfortable D major, that unsettled opening music comes back.
It
pops up again, but then it melts into this most gorgeous ending section, which, as you say, just drops right down through the winds and the strings to a sort of pianissimo.
And that just kind of fades away.
And it fades away. But it is this, what I think of as this halo effect. And the fact that he ends it's on the last chord, it's sort of in like 15 or 16 parts, right? It's divisi. And you have all the overtones and resonances. It's just glorious.
That's a stunning piece. It's on a concert called Conductor's Choice. I'll be the conductor of the Prairie Ensemble concert Saturday night at 7:30 at McKinley Presbyterian Church in Champaign. Mozart's 25th symphony to open, Richard Strauss's first horn concerto in the midst with Bernard Scully of the University of Illinois faculty, and then Vaughan Williams' 5th symphony, which we've been talking about here with Professor Christina Bashford, also of the University of Illinois School of Music, on this portion of Live and Local. Thanks, Christina, for joining us on the show.
Thank you very much.
And stay tuned for a live performance in our studio by one of the young artists who will be featured at the Young Artist Scholarship Concert of the Chorale on Sunday, May 12th. And here's the opening of the first horn concerto by Richard Strauss, probably the most famous recording ever made of this piece, which features the English horn player Dennis Brain. That's the opening part of the opening movement of the first of the two horn concertos that Richard Strauss wrote, a performance by a horn player, Dennis Brain, with the Philharmonia Orchestra conducted by Wolfgang Sawallisch, the original classic recording, and some would still probably say the best recording ever made of those pieces. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9, where we invite you to join us for the vintage vinyl sale that is coming up this Saturday at our new site located at 40 East University Avenue in Champaign, which is just east of Seven Saints and north of the Illinois Terminal. Proceeds will benefit Illinois Radio Reader. You can sort through thousands of CDs, DVDs, tapes, and albums, plus stereo equipment for sale. It's a vintage vinyl. If you'd like sale hours and more information about Illinois Radio Reader, visit will.illinois.edu. the annual Young Artist Scholarship Concert that the Chorale, based in Champaign-Urbana, is giving is coming up on Sunday, May 12th at 7 o'clock p.m. at Faith United Methodist Church on South Prospect Avenue in Champaign. It is a free concert. Aside from being their scholarship concert, it is billed as world-class singing music of the masters, and the masters primarily sung by the chorale itself under the direction of Julie Beiler, who is with me on this portion of the program. She's also brought along one of those Young Artist Scholarship winners, and the concert will feature this particular winner and also some of the previous winners. So first, Julie, welcome back to the show, and why don't you introduce the winners.
Yes. Thank you, Kevin. Yes, world class, because that's the way we feel about these young people that come to audition for us. And it was tough this time. We have limited resources, and we had five people to whom we are giving scholarships, two full scholarships and three honorable mention scholarships. Caitlin Richardson from Mohammed Seymour High School, which is kind of nice since that's where we started this whole thing 30 years ago. And Celia Williams, who's from Homer but goes to school at St. Joe. And I'll refer to my notes. Samantha Wells, who is from Champaign Centennial. Kate Myers, she likes. And she's from Central in Champaign. And Emily Markovich from Hoopston got our application, came over. She goes to Hoopston Area High School. Did I do five?
That was five.
Okay. So, and there, you know, I think you were first, Caitlin, weren't you on the program on the audition day?
Yes.
And so you always heave a sigh of relief when you get a really wonderful, qualified person. And we thought, oh, great, we've got someone. And then the next one came in, and she was great. And then so it went on five times. And so that's what we're doing. They'll all be presented at this concert, and their parents and any music teachers that want to come to support these kids.
And this is a program that the Chorale has been doing for how long now, the Young Artist Scholarship
Program?
This is
our 22nd year. We've actually been in business for 30 years, making no money. And then our first year at the Virginia Theater, for See You at the Virginia, gave us a little income, and we went to Willie Somerville, actually, and just confined our contest to Urbana High School, and he helped us. And then it spread from there on. And we have given awards to probably 45 or 6 young, talented people.
And as I said, a couple of the previous winners will be appearing on the program. And we'll be hearing one of those by way of CD in a few minutes.
That's the greatest fun, is to keep track of these people, where they are, and to invite them back. Lots of times when you go away to a school like Juilliard, for instance, you're not any longer the big fish in small pond and don't have as many performing opportunities. So we like to bring people back and show us and show the audience their progress. And that way we can honor them small honorariums and acknowledge their progress as musicians.
It won't pay their tuition, but it'll make a dent
in
their books.
It certainly won't pay their tuition,
at least, no. Maybe.
Yes, we say like if this allows you to have a few more private lessons your first semester, then great.
Well, Caitlin came along actually dressed for a performance tonight, or partially dressed for a performance tonight. I should clarify that a little bit. She's got curlers in her hair because she is taking on the role of
Nancy in Oliver Twist.
At Mohammed Seymour High School.
Yes.
Now you say Oliver Twist. Is this the music? I assume the musical, Oliver?
Yes.
Yeah. Which is just called that, but based on Dickens' tale. It's a wonderful, wonderful musical. Congratulations on landing that role.
Oh, thank you. It's a very talented cast, and I'm really looking forward to being part of it.
And she sings one of the best songs in the show, if you ask me, out of some really good songs. And you've come along to sing something for us. Is this something that you will be singing on the chorale concert?
No, this is I have two main songs that I sing for a lot of events, and this is the other song. The song I'll be singing for the chorale concert is called Il mio bel fuoco. It's an Italian piece, And
I told her no free previews. So
yeah.
So she's singing the other one, which is
fair enough.
Il mio bel fuoco. Oh no, sorry.
Right
I have
now.
Been wandering through the green woods by Bernard Herrmann.
Bernard Herrmann. Famous especially for his film music, of course.
Yes.
I didn't know he wrote songs.
And this from Wuthering Heights, so.
From the film?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Caitlin's going to be accompanied by the chorale's regular accompanist.
My favorite guy.
Michael
Dr.
Hammer.
Michael Hammer, yes.
Thank you.
Accompanist extraordinaire. He really is.
Who has also been in this studio before as sort of a rock pianist. I guess you could say, if that's what, is it The Unpossible that is the group? Or am I getting, the Gavin Stolte Project that you play in?
Yes, actually the Gavin Stolte Project and The Unpossible are two manifestations of very nearly the same rock phenomenon, if you will.
Both of them including yourself? Or
yes.
One of them? All right, okay. And Mike Pritchard, who is our sound engineer, I'm putting a plug here because he's in both of those groups as well, which mm-hmm. is how we got to have you in here before in that capacity. But this is a very different capacity. So let's hear you sing. It's Caitlin Richardson, who is what year?
A senior.
A senior at Mohammed Seymour High School.
Yes.
And is one of the Young Scholarship winners who will be singing on the Young Artist Scholarship Concert by the Chorale on Sunday, May 12th at Faith United Methodist Church in Champaign. Thank you very much. Caitlin Richardson from Mohammed Seymour High School, who's one of the winners this year of the Chorale's Young Artists Scholarship.
And one of the busiest gals I know.
Oh, yeah?
It's like making a transition. She sang Oliver this morning for a matinee, and she's singing again tonight and again on Saturday. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yes.
And these high school seniors, which, by the way, they must be seniors to qualify for this scholarship, are just incredibly busy to try and get a hold of them there. It's a good thing we have cell phones nowadays.
Exactly.
You know, I'm backstage, I'm waiting for my entrance. And
so, Caitlin, as long as you're here, you want to put a pitch in for your performances? When are they?
Oh,
of,
yeah.
Oliver.
They are 7:30 at 7:30. Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
So this week?
Yeah, this week.
Okay, so and tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday.
Yeah, just this week, though. We don't do 2 weeks. I am not on every night. I have a wonderful counterpart, Brady McGiff. She is the other Nancy, and she's on Friday, Sunday. The Sunday matinee is at 2:30 at our high school. This is all at our high school. And I really, really love this musical because, you know, the typical musical is like a boy falls in love with a girl and there's songs about it and, you know, happily ever after. But this one has a lot of depth about it that I really think people can take a really good message from.
And no boys fall in love with any girls in this one, actually.
Well, there's love complications between Nancy.
That is for sure.
Yes.
Tragic love complications. Not one of the prettier parts of that particular musical. Well, thanks for coming in. Best of luck with these performances and also, of course, with your performance at the chorale concert.
Thank you very much.
Caitlin Richardson with Michael Hammer. And you're listening to Live and Local here on FM 90.9. The chorale, of course, will sing on its own concert. Here's a sample of their singing from a previous concert. They have an annual, what they call their Celebration of Life concert in the fall. This is from November of 2008. And a spiritual called Let Me Fly. Were you conducting this one or was Alice Parker doing this?
No, I did this one.
Okay, Julie Byler conducting the chorale from a few years ago. Well-deserved applause for a performance of the spiritual Let Me Fly by the chorale under the direction of Julie Byler, who's their artistic director, from a concert in November of 2008. And they're giving their next concert on Sunday, May 12th at First United Methodist Church on South Prospect Avenue in Champaign, a program that will include some music by Maurice Durufle, Sergei Rachmaninoff, Eugene Butler, who's somebody I don't know.
Well, he's contemporary. Not this contemporary, but still living, a lovely little art song called The White Moon. And then we're ending the concert with Lucy Hurt's arrangement of Abide With Me.
I assume the tune that people know.
Yes, right. You know, but the Foray Requiem is John Rutter's edition. I don't know if you're familiar with it or not. But
I've heard of it.
He went back and arranged it more as though he thought Foray might have, with smaller instrumentation. And we're going to use that small, I think maybe just 8 or 9 players, violas, string bass, 2 horns, but no upper strings, no upper brass, and organ, of course.
So it should be a nice warm sound.
Yes, yeah, and I think it's good because none of the instruments really sound like singers, so the singers will be heard and distinguished from the accompaniment. So I'm looking forward to it.
We'll hear a sample of the Foray in just a moment by another performing ensemble. But first I wanted to let people hear a little bit from one of the past Young Artist Scholarship winners who will be coming back to perform on this concert. She is also a soprano who is now making her way in the professional world and doing quite well. In fact, I have a review here that from somebody that seems to sort of sum things up pretty well. Elizabeth has everything one looks for in a soprano of her type, whatever that means exactly. Brilliant high notes, of course, complete assurance in coloratura, musical taste, dramatic sensitivity, and striking good looks.
Who wouldn't like a review like
that's
that?
That's pretty good, coming from no less than the stage director of the Metropolitan Opera.
Exactly.
So not bad. Here is Elizabeth. She was known in these parts as Amy. She grew up around here, but is professionally known as Elizabeth. And what we're going to hear is either all of or a little of The Willow Song from Douglas Moore's opera called The Ballad of Baby Doe. And this is was recorded at the National Opera Center with pianist Michael Fanelli. That was the voice of soprano Elizabeth Treat, who has a remarkably rich sound in her low register for one who is actually billed as a coloratura soprano, and she goes really quite high. That was music by Douglas Moore from The Ballad of a Baby Doe called The Willow Song. And you could actually find more excerpts of Elizabeth singing on her website. I know she has put some up there Elizabeth Treat is her name, known when she was in Champaign-Urbana as Amy Treat. So, and she says friends and family still get away with calling her that.
Yes, okay. we fall in that category. I can't think of her as Elizabeth, so she's Amy to me.
She'll be Amy. And the voice you just heard belongs to Julie Byler, who's the artistic director of the chorale, who will be sort of representing Amy as a former winner of the Young Artist Scholarship, as well as the new winners, and also a past winner, tenor Davion Williams, who's currently a student at the University of Illinois.
He is here now with his master's and studying with Barrington Coleman. And yes, having these people back, I think, is really good for, we have a few, I call them angels, who gift us with scholarship money every year. And I think it's really rewarding for them to hear and see the growth in these students who have gone on and done exactly what they said they wanted to do successfully. So, yes, Davion's going to sing something from Mignon, and then he will sing Ride on King Jesus.
Another spiritual, of course, of which we heard a sample from the chorale earlier. The big piece on the program, Fauré's Requiem.
Right.
Sort of a low-key big piece.
Interestingly enough, Fauré himself said that his composition really wasn't born from the death of any loved one, although his mother and father passed away within that time. But more or less, his philosophy about death, that it was not the end of anything but the beginning. And so I think it's a little less angsty and a little less intense, quite beautiful, actually, in that light, let me say that John Rutter's edition, which is what we're doing, goes back to what Fauré had originally designed. You know, so many of these grand works like Messiah and so forth were originally designed for small choirs and small little orchestras in church balconies back in Bach's time. So Rutter has reorchestrated this to include very small strings and violas and the low strings and a couple of horns and a harp and organ.
And sort of recreates that original intention in the smaller scale of the piece, I guess.
Right.
The chorale will, of course, do the piece in its entirety. We're going to go out in a moment with the very end, which sort of illustrates what Julie was just saying. You know, it is called In Paradise, and not a bad way to end what I guess you could say was,
or to begin.
Was death.
To begin. I think that was his whole philosophy, was the beginning.
This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. Hope you can get a chance to hear the chorale on Sunday, May 12th, 7 o'clock p.m. at Faith United Methodist Church in Champaign. You're listening to 90.9 WYNL FM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music and More for Central Illinois. WYNL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. Here's John Rutter himself leading his Cambridge Singers and members of the City of London Sinfonia in the arrangement Julie was referring to of In Paradisum, the final movement of Fauré's Requiem, just about a minute's worth here as we wrap up the show.